morning, good afternoon, and good evening to distinguished chairs and speakers, as well as to our audiences. We are back again with two great speakers for you today. The first speaker of today is no stranger to us. He is a very well-known personality and our honored guest from USA, California, Professor James Osman. Dr. Osman is now a clinical professor of neurosurgery in the Department of Neurosurgery, University of California at Los Angeles. He also holds the position of the clinical professor of neurosurgery at the Loma Linda University Medical Center in Loma Linda, California. He has visited many centers across the USA, advising them on strategic planning for the future in complex healthcare environments. Dr. Osman is recognized as a leading authority in neuroscience development. He has lectured on and is respected for his futuristic views in healthcare and neurosciences. Along with his wife, Carolyn, he has created and produced a television series for public broadcast stations entitled The Leading Gen, What Will You Do With The Rest Of Your Life? For the people from 50 years to 100 plus years of age, a program which was viewed by millions of people across America. Dr. Osman was the creator and editor-in-chief of Surgical Neurology, an international neurosurgical journal which began in the year 1994. Under his leadership, the journal rose to become one of the top three journals in neurosurgery. In 2020, Dr. Osman created and developed a new educational system, SNI Digital, based on the discussion and interaction between audiences and the speaker as an alternative to the virtual platform Zoom. Dr. Osman has published over 300 articles and book chapters, and he has been an invited lecturer at the national and international conferences in nearly 70 countries. We are extremely honored to have him today as a speaker with us, and today he'll be imparting loads of wisdom for the young neurosurgeons in this very interesting topic titled The Most Important Lesson I Learned in Medicine. The second speaker for today is our honored senior faculty from Japan, Professor Mitsuhito Mase. Professor Mase is the director of Nagoya University Hospital and is also the professor and chairman, Department of Neurosurgery in Nagoya University, Graduate School of Medical Sciences. He adorns the position of director of the Emergency and Critical Care Center, Nagoya University Hospital as well. Professor Mase is an expert in the management of cerebrovascular diseases, endovascular treatment, endoscopic surgery, traumatic brain injury, and CSF physiology. He is a member of the board, an instructor in Japan Neurosurgical Society and Japanese Society on Surgery for Cerebral Stroke. We are extremely honored to have him today at our webinars, and he will be talking about updates regarding CSF physiology, current options, and future subjects. The chair for the first session of today's webinar is our honored guest from Colombia, Professor Tito Perilla. Professor Perilla currently is a consultant neurosurgeon and spine surgeon at Hospital Infantil Universitario de San Jose. He is also the head of neurosurgery department at Hospital Clinic San Rafael and professor of neurosurgery and spine surgery at the Neurologic Institute of Colombia. He has more than 450 publications and oral presentations combined. He was the president of the Colombian Association of Neurosurgery and president of the Federation of Latin American Neurosurgical Societies. He was a member of the nominations and bylaws committees of the WFNS and a delegate for 28 years to the executive committee. He is currently the honorary president and co-director of scientific program after WFNS World Congress, which is going to be held in 2022. He was a recipient of several awards during his vast illustrious career, including the gold medal of the flank and distinction of the Congress of Colombian Republic. We are extremely honored to have him today to chair the session of Professor James Osman. The second chair for today is our honored guest from Saudi Arabia, Professor Ahmed Ammar. Professor Ammar is the professor and head of department of neurosurgery at the King Faisal Health University Hospital, Dammam, Saudi Arabia. He is a vastly experienced neurosurgeon who has conducted more than 6,000 surgeries. He has a special interest in pediatric neurosurgery. He has authored the most famous book in neurosurgery titled Hydrocephalus, What We Know and What We Still Don't Know. He serves on the editorial board of several internationally reputed neurosurgery channels. He is the recipient of several awards and other honors from the Saudi government for his outstanding contribution towards neurosurgery. He has decorated several academic positions in various internationally renowned organization during his long career. He is currently the co-chairman of the WFNS Ethics Committee. We are extremely grateful to him to have him today to chair the session of Professor Mitsuhito Mase. On behalf of the Education Committee of the ACNS and the President, Professor Yoko Kaito, I would like to welcome both the speakers, chairs, and the distinguished audiences to this online platform of ACNS webinars. Dr. Liu Boon Seng from Malaysia is my co-host for today. And with that introduction, I would like to hand over this online platform to the first chair, Professor Tito Perilla.
I would like to thank all of you and all organization committee of this webinar for giving me this opportunity to present to Professor James Osman. He's a great neurosurgeon. He has been with us working for at least 40 years ago when I met him at the University of Minnesota. So I, for me, it's a great honor to speak about some words from him. He is a real master of master in neurosurgery. I want to tell you why is the reason I say that. First of all, he beginning to work always with care, with love, for save the life of the patient. I can give testify of this situation. Always he think and putting all his bets for doing provide better care to the people who was around of him and request to him for help. He started working in one difficult field of neurosurgery at that time, vascular, but vascular related with the stroke. And really, he's the pioneer, and he has the ability to see for 40 years ago, now the advances in how to take care of that kind of patient that at that moment, no people take care of that. Neurologists and neurosurgeons always go to make rounds and look that poor patients fell in one bed and nothing happened. Only give aspirin. And he started introduce the concept of revascularization of the brain. And he will be fate for in that field. Yeah, I know he introduced the concept of the penumbra and how we can change that field. And now we will see the explosion in special in all development countries with the endovascular, how he has the reason at that time. But anyway, he put in all his effort, all his soul to push people to give his hand to help others, young neurosurgeons. Always. I can see here in Latin America from many years how he helped the young neurosurgeons and pushed them to improve neurosurgery. He has been thousands of times over Latin America, and he has been mentor of many neurosurgeons of each country of in Latin America, and also in many regions like Africa and Asia, and also Europe, even the United States, to he help with love, with care, with tender for improve his skill or his knowledge in neurosurgery. And also, I can say that he spent almost 60 years of his life for care of the patient and academic career. Also, he has tried to push us to tell other people and share the knowledge for improve. Minutes before I hear from him, we'll be learning in this conferencia, in this conference with each other. It's for that reason, all of us, all people, all neurosurgeons who are attending to this important conference will be thanks to all the organization for give us the opportunity to listen him and learn from him. And Dr. Ausman, thank you. God bless you always, because you are doing the best of your soul, of your nice soul. You have clean soul. You are very honest and dedicated to neurosurgery worldwide. Thank you for give even today with all tender and love that you always are giving to us. Thank you so much. And I can say for finish that you really are master of master, and you all young people must to see him like paradigm to follow in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Tito, for the very nice things you said. I appreciate that very much. Well, I appreciate, first of all, being invited to talk to you. It's an honor for me to do that. It's a pleasure for me to see Tito and Ahmed and all the other people who are here. I've had the pleasure and the good fortune to go to your countries many times and learned a lot from you. And we're going to talk about what are the most important lessons in medicine. I'm now 83 years old. And what are the important lessons I learned? And we will talk about that subject. First question, who are we? Who are we? The universe was started some 13 billion years ago. 13 billion years ago, we have no idea how things began. In various religions around the world, we attribute them to various gods. Whatever you believe in is correct because no one knows the answer. I think often when I see smaller animals or insects and I see what is the world that they live in, they don't understand my world. They don't understand your world. But yet they work and they do the things that they have to do to live and to survive. And they don't know. And we're the same. We don't know what happened before 13 billion years ago. And we're working, and maybe we don't have the sense, we don't have the understanding of what's in the world. We have a dog, and the dog was barking a half hour ago, and I didn't see anything outside. But the dog has a different sense than what we have and knows somebody is there. What is that sense? Because we don't know it. We can only hear in a certain range of frequencies. We can only see in a certain way. We're lucky to be able to communicate. But do we know what's beyond? We don't know. The Earth was formed 4.5 billion years ago from gases and dust. And over time, eventually, humans appeared on the Earth. And you can have different beliefs as to how you think that happened. We have strong beliefs that it was through evolution. There are other people who believe other things. People can believe what they want to believe. There is no right or wrong. We're trying to find out what the truth is, but we have to respect everybody's opinion and what they're thinking. And so about 500,000 years ago, humans appeared in the Earth. They started out in Africa and they spread to Europe. They spread to the Middle East, which was Babylon in those times. It was where Dr. Amar is from. It's from that region of the world, which is a wonderful place to be. And they had, they were initially people who were hunters and gatherers. They didn't have time. They didn't have anything that we have today. And eventually they gathered around rivers. The Tigris and the Euphrates or the Mediterranean. And they formed groups called civilizations. And so we've had civilizations. I visited Xi'an in China. I saw they had unearthed a civilization that was 10,000 years old. Amazing accomplishments. They had our wonderful architecture. They had tunnels to take water. They had many advances 10,000 years ago. And how many years before that, thousands of years, did it take to get to that point? And we started recording history some 3,500 years ago. And so we're beginning to find out people started from Africa, they spread around the world, they spread to the Middle East, they went to Asia. At that time, the world was different, the land was connected. They came to North and South America, and everyone, they changed. They had genetic changes because of the environment and illness and disease. We know that species compete with one another, and there's survival of those who can survive. And so the people who would survive, we have left, and they're all different colors, all different religions, all different everything. It doesn't matter. And here we are now starting from 10 to 50,000 years ago, beginning to have civilizations. We went through great periods, and people don't know this. There were great advances in China 4 and 5,000 years ago, incredible arts. At that time, governments were basically monarchies, or they were ruled by rulers. Some were good and some were not so good. And then we came to Greece and to Rome. We came to Europe, and we began to think about how we handle life. And people began to develop reason that was not reason that just came from the church, but it was beyond that. And so now I'm sitting here today in the United States and California, and I'm talking to people all over the world, instantaneously, electronically. I couldn't do this 5,000 years ago, 10,000 years ago, 1,000 years ago, 100 years ago, and maybe even 10 years ago. And in the whole history of the universe, this comes to something that we need to feel, and it's a humility. Our civilization today is a mere speck, seconds in time of the whole universe. We will live, we will die, other civilizations will follow us. How are we going to live together? And so we're going to talk about what I've learned in living together. If you look at the population of our country now, in the gray part, this is a population by year. If you look in the gray part of the graph here, those are people over 80, that's me. If you look at people in the blue part of the graph, those are the young up to 20. And all the rest in the middle are the young people who are the young people, the people who are going to be the face of neurosurgery in the coming decades, in the coming centuries. So I'm humble being asked to talk to you. I mean nothing. I'm a speck. If I tell you some things that are of value, fine. But this is the world you have to live in, and this is you have to shape in the way you want to make it a good world. So we older people are passing to you the responsibility for this world and its problems. And I'm going to talk to you about the good. I'm going to talk to you about the bad. I'm going to talk to you about the problems. How do we solve those problems? Because these are issues that are fundamental before you become a neurosurgeon. These are fundamental to living. And if we don't understand that, we won't be able to live well. In all the history of civilization that's recorded 3,500 years, we've spent 3,300 years fighting with wars. 3,300 out of 3,500 years at war. Does that make sense? What do we gain from that? We need to think about those things. My wife and I have been privileged to be able to go to 70 countries around the world. Most of them have been low to middle income countries. We've been to the high income countries. It doesn't matter. when I went to these countries, people would take me and show me the great monuments or the great castles or the great churches. And I began to wonder how many lives were lost, how many people died making those monuments to some other human being. So I didn't want to see that anymore. We wanted to talk to the people. So we talked to the people in the farms, the poor people everywhere. We talked to people who are friends of you and me. And we would sit in the homes and we talk about important issues and how we're handling them. I've had dinner with the rich. I've had meals with the poor. And this is what we've learned from people all over the world. Most people, if not all people, love their family. They want to have the freedom to raise their family and do for their family what they want. And they want to have peace. Everywhere in the world, every country in the world, it was the same. Those are the people who come into your office. Now, in some countries, there are some leaders, and this is throughout entire history that we know of. Some leaders want power. They want to control your life. They want power. They want riches. They want you to do what they think you should do. And that is even happening today in countries around the world. That's not what the people want. The people want what I told you. The patient wants what he comes to see you about. Take care of my family. The other people who want power are either mentally ill or psychopathic. Many of them are. They've killed millions of people. For what? What are you going to do about it? Well, the principle is that the patient should always come first. A patient comes to your office, he brings his family, either his child is sick, or his wife is not feeling well, or his mother and father are sick, but he comes to you because he respects you, because you are a learned person, you know things that they don't know. You've been to school, you've been educated. And he wants to come to you for help. And when he shows up in the office, in your office, and he looks at you, he's putting the life of his family in your hands. You have his life in your hands. He's giving you that. What does he want in return? He wants you to know that he wants you to do everything you possibly can do to help his son, his daughter, his wife, his mother, his father. He wants you to do that. That's the contract he makes with you. Nobody ever has that contract. It isn't a hospital in the world where that contract exists. It is the most important contract in medicine. The hospital gives you contracts to sign and things you have to sign. It is nothing compared to this contract. And when you agree to take the patient, you have agreed to that contract. That's a bond between you and the patient. You will do everything you can to help that patient. That's been going on for all time, all humanity. The patient wants you to do that no matter what the hospital says, no matter what the government says, no matter what your colleagues say. He wants you to do the best you can do for him. That's nothing wrong with that. And you've agreed to do that. Does your hospital agree to that? I've been to hospitals all over the world and in the United States. No. They don't. Does the government believe that? You know that they don't. Does your organization believe in that? Or are the people in the organization more important? I've seen this all over the world. You see it locally in your hospitals. What about personal issues? Some people want to go home all of a sudden. My father was in the hospital. All over the chart was written that he was allergic to narcotics. So at 6 o'clock at night, when they were changing shifts, a new doctor came in and gave my father some narcotics, had a disaster. Somebody didn't do their work. They didn't read the chart. It was right there. And as a result, his family suffered and he died. Is that the right thing to do? The patient comes before all of those things. No matter what anybody tells you, your contract is with the patient. And don't ever forget that. That's a contract. That's what they believe. That's what they want you to do. The next thing they want from you is the truth. Well, that seems obvious. Well, is it? What is the truth? They want you to do the best. If you haven't done the best, they want to know. If you can't do the case, they want you to tell them. How many people do that? Or do the case so they can make the money? Is that how you want to live? Is that what the patient wants? You're the patient. Ultimately, you will be the patient. Is that what you want? You have to be truthful with the patient. You have to be truthful with yourself. What is the truth? In the world we live in, do we really know what the truth is? If you pick up your newspaper, are you going to find the truth? Probably not. We live in a world where we've just had the virus. People have done work on the virus. We know in countries all over the world, there was scientific work that was done showing that drugs would be effective, but we were told they weren't effective. That was not true. How many died as a result of that? There were people in hospitals in the United States, in Europe, Russia, China, everywhere, who were working in the hospitals who were told that if they told the truth about what was going on during the virus, they would be forced to leave. You know that's true. Is that what people are coming to you for as a doctor? So you don't have to tell the truth. That's not who I want to take care of me. I'm going to tell you some things that you don't hear much because people don't want to talk about them. But all over the world, people are being accused of racism. Everybody in this conference call being accused of a racist, either because you're white or because you're this or you're that. That you make decisions based on color or race or the sexual prevalence or religion or country or politics. When we started the journal, Surgical Neurology International, 10 years ago, I never knew who sent the article in. I didn't know what country they were from. All I did was to make a judgment based on the paper. Was it a good paper or not a good paper? If it wasn't good, but it was a good idea, we wanted to help you make it a good idea so everybody could read about it. It had nothing to do with what race or what you believed. Everybody has different things they believe in. Nothing wrong with that. There's no right answer. When I'm operating on a patient, when you're operating on a patient, I don't know what color the patient is. I don't know what his religion is. I don't care what his sexual preference is. My goal is to do the best I can for the patient. And I want everybody in the operating room to do that and everybody in the hospital to do that. None of these things mean anything to me. That's not important. The patient means everything. what's happening around the world. I used to, Tito mentioned, he was met me in Minneapolis. This is a man, you've seen his picture all over the world, George Floyd. What is the truth? And all the pictures on the screen come from countries all over the world, China, Asia, Japan, Middle East, South America, North America. What was the truth? I've seen the videos. I looked into this. This is a man who was a criminal. He just was trying to pass bad money at a store. He'd been a drug addict. When he was taken out of his car, he was complaining, "I can't breathe, I can't breathe." They wanted to put him in a police car. He resisted that. He was resisting arrest. So they got him on the ground, and we saw a picture of a policeman kneeling on his neck. What you don't know is that was a common police accepted procedure. Why don't you know it? Because the day after he died, they took it off the website so you wouldn't know the truth. That was their procedure. They had an autopsy performed. Do you know what that showed? What's the truth? The autopsy showed he had a toxic level of fentanyl in his body, 10 times the normal dose. His lungs were consolidated. The pathologist said he would have died from that alone. But you didn't hear that because they didn't release that information until 3 months later. Why is that? Is that the truth? Is that what you're going to do when you're a doctor talking to a patient? You're not going to tell them the truth? You're the young generation. You're going to inherit everything. What are you going to do about that? You want people to tell the truth or not? If you don't have the truth, you don't have a civilization. You have war. And so he said he couldn't breathe. And now we know why he couldn't breathe. Was there a crime committed? Well, they went to court. Did he get a fair trial? I don't think so. He was convicted before he even had a trial. Is that what you want? Is that how you would want to be treated in this world? I don't think so. Well, why do you accept it? And then what's behind it? You see on the slide here something that says Black Lives Matter. And everybody around the world rallied for Black Lives Matter. You're a doctor. Black Lives Matter, White Lives Matter, Jewish Lives Matter, Catholic Lives Matter, Asian Lives Matter. All lives matter. But they don't want you to say that. All lives matter. That's what it is to be a doctor. It doesn't matter to you. And if you support that, where do you think that's going to get you? If you support the truth, where is that going to get you? Those are decisions you'll have to make because there are forces in the world trying to get you to deny the truth. That's why it's important. Does it matter? Yes, it does matter. If I'm on call, do I have to tell the truth about what's happening to the patient or do I cover it up? What kind of decision will my mentor make if I give him the wrong information, the wrong decision? The consequences are immense, but people don't think about it. That's what it means. That's why over centuries, we have laws saying we must tell the truth. What are you going to fight for? Are you going to fight for the truth? Are you going to fight for what's right in your life? I've had to do that my whole life. If you want to think of bias, you know that I'm Jewish. For my whole life, I've struggled against bias. I couldn't get into schools because they didn't want Jews. I went into a residency where I was told At the end of the residency, well, my wife was anti-Semitic, I'm sorry. Couldn't get jobs. My ancestors have fought for 2,000 years because they were Jewish. What about that? Do all lives matter, or is it just Black lives? And what do we find now? Anti-Semitism is rising across the world. Why is that? Because people accept it. Because that's not the truth. Is that what you want to do? Or is that what you're part of? I'm not. This is a saying. This came from a Lutheran minister in Germany. He was put in a concentration camp with 6 million other people, mostly Jews. And he said, when the Nazis came for the Jews, I didn't speak up because I wasn't a Jew. Then they came for the people who wanted unions. Since I wasn't in a union, I didn't speak up. Then they came for the Catholics. But I wasn't a Catholic, I was a Lutheran, Protestant. And finally they came for me, but there was no one left to speak. That's what the end result is. Of not standing up for the truth, standing up for the patient. I've just written a book with a colleague. It's called The China Virus. I've been to China many times, had the first meeting in the world in China, international meeting in neurosurgery. We name diseases after all the locations where they are, or rivers, or wherever they are. There's nothing wrong with that. The question in the book is, what is the truth? We don't know the truth. We're not being given the truth. So the book goes through a chronology of what happens day by day, and you decide what you think the truth is. We don't tell you. Can you get the book? It's free. If you go to Surgical Neurology, it's sni.global. Go to the menu and go through the menu. You'll find ebooks. It's free. You can read it. Everybody can read it. And make your own mind up. What is the truth? So getting back to the patient wants you to treat them like he's a member or she's a member of your family, because they are. It's like they're your family member. What are you going to do? I was going to operate on a woman who was 60 some odd years old. She was from Mexico. I went to see her. There were 20 people in the room. It was her family. Her husband had died. She was the matriarch, the mother of the family. This is important in all of Latin America. I wasn't just operating on her. I was operating on the other 20 or 30 people in the family. It changed my plan. Because they were a member of my family. And I didn't want to leave her with any problem because she had a whole family to take care of. And those things are important to know. Some of you worry about success. What is success? I want to be successful. There's a simple answer. When I was working, there was a resident I was working in, and he would be moonlighting. That meant he would be going and working after hours in a private office. And I asked him, what does it take to be successful? And what he said and what I've learned is all you have to do is say that you care for the patient. And if you tell people and people know and the word spreads by mouth that you care for the patient, you'll never have to worry about having patients. They'll come to you. You'll never have to worry about money. But if you put money first, you're more interested in money. You'll lose the patient. You'll probably wind up being divorced. Your children will wind up being greedy, and your life will be a misery. That's a choice. That's a lesson. What's the final lesson? There are religions all over the world. I talked about that earlier. I talked about how what our origins are. We don't know. Science doesn't know. We're not going to find out in our lifetime. But there is a principle. As when people gathered together in civilizations, and they maybe had a certain person they elected as a leader, they all had certain things to do. And there was one fundamental principle that says, do unto others as you would do want done unto you. It is a simple, fundamental principle in all of life. Do people do that? No. Most people do. Most of the people I see around the world, the common person, yes, they do. That's what they want. That's what they want from you as a doctor. Do unto others. It doesn't matter what religion you are. It's irrelevant. It doesn't matter if you think you're an atheist. That doesn't matter. If you don't believe in doing unto others what you would want done unto you, can you have a civilization? The answer is no. There are fundamental things, principles here. Can you let the truth be corrupted? No. That's not what you would want done to you. Why are you doing it to somebody else? What about this? When you're born, you don't know what's good and what's bad. You learn. And some people wind up in life being optimistic, looking for the positives. And some people are critical, looking for the negatives. It's this bad. I don't have this equipment. I don't have this that I want for the patient, or you're not doing your job. That's your choice to make. You can either believe in good in people, which I believe, or you can believe that people aren't good. The young people today have grown up because they've had some harm done to them, and they can't trust people. And they have relationships they try to have with each other. And they're trying to find somebody they can trust, somebody they can believe. And I just told you why they can't, because the truth isn't out there. So it's your choice to make. Nobody does it for you. Do you want to believe that things are going to get better and then you're going to work to make them better? Or are you going to think that they're not very good and you won't work for anything? That's a choice. You make the choice. Nobody makes it for you. You do. What do you have now in this call that I don't have? When I started, there were no computers. There were no cell phones. I had to go to the library and look through the books and the journals. And before my time, they didn't have that. Now I can have a world of information on my desktop. Incredible. I can instantly communicate like we're doing now. And I can have a real-time discussion like we're going to have. So I didn't have those things. You have those things. That's an incredible gift. How are you going to use it? So what did we do? We started a journal, Surgical Neurology International. It was a journal that was free. We went all over the world. We found people couldn't afford to go to meetings. They couldn't afford journals. They were charging too much money. And so we made it free. And it were articles from people all over the world. We publish articles from more countries than probably any other journal in our field, and probably any other journal elsewhere. Because it didn't matter to us. And you just go to sni.global, put that in your computer, and you're there on the website. That's the homepage. And you can have an encyclopedia. You can have a whole library of information about neurosurgery on videos and everything that you can have. It's all free, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, all year long. That's what people want. We started something new. So people want more than that. They want to be able to sit down and talk to each other, just like I did over the past 60 years when I went to all the countries. We talked to people. I learned tremendous amounts from all of you. My wife and I learned a tremendous amount. We learned about life. Life's more than neurosurgery. So we had a meeting. 1,000 people registered, almost 600 people came. We had a meeting that was discussion. We had 57 speakers from all around the world discussing the very cases that you handle every day. What do you do for trauma? What do you do for a hematoma? What do you do for a spine problem? What do you do for pediatric tumors? What do you do for these things? And we heard that the experts even differed. That's what we know. Nobody's right, nobody's wrong. They differ. We respect that. And we learn from it. So what are you going to do with your life? Because I just told you, we're handing you this civilization with all the good and bad parts. What are you going to do with your life? Well, some people sit down and they say, well, we're the smartest people in the world. I have an answer for that question from all the places I visited. There are smart people all over this world. They're not just in the United States. They're not just in Europe. There are very smart people in very poor places. Very, very talented people. We need to hear from those people. You don't need to go to the United States or Europe. You're sitting with very smart people. Learn from them. Then I'm asked, where's the best neurosurgery in the world? And some people think it's in the United States or it's in Europe. It isn't. It's all over the world. One of the first operations for carotid endarterectomy was made in South America. Didn't have anything to do with the United States or Europe. Stereotaxis was developed in Sweden. In Russia, they developed catheterization and they could put in balloons and coils that we now treat aneurysms in Russia. The man worked very hard, Dr. Segalo, in the laboratory to do that. He didn't have all the modern equipment, but he did it. And this happens all over the world. But some people from the high income countries want to make you think that that's where the best is done, and that's not true. The best is what you make it. You can be the best. You do the best you can with what you've got. That's what you do in life. No matter where you are, even if you're in a high income country, you have to do the best with what you have. And if you don't make use of everything and you're a high income country, I don't have much respect for you. Because I know people who don't have anywhere near what you have, who have done much more in their life. And I respect those people. And I look around and I see the young people and I see they complain about they can't have this or they can't have that. And for me, this is the greatest opportunity I've ever seen in my lifetime. If all the people around you want to be mediocre, want to be average, and you want to be the best, you work to be the best. And it'll make you feel like you're just wonderful and you feel great and you're going to be a happy person. You're going to make your wife happy and your family happy and all the people who touch you happy. Because you're going to take advantage of life's great opportunities. They come every minute, every hour of every day. You have to be the best person you can be. What are your goals? You're not going to get anywhere unless you have goals. If you don't know where you're going, you're not going to get there. How do you reach your goals? It's simple. Can you dream? Yes, you should dream. You should think of the things that you'd like to accomplish and then find a way to accomplish them. Here's how you do it. You learn from medicine. There are certain principles. Patient comes to you with a problem. You take a history, you do a physical examination, you get the lab work, you talk to the patient, you get your data, and then you go home. And now on the internet, you can do this 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, the World Library, and you study and you read about what the patient's problem was. And you read of what other problems can be like that. That's your research. Some people say they don't like to do research. That's what research is about. That's what it means to go to the lab, is to learn what I'm thinking about. Then you come up with a differential diagnosis. You test one out, you test another out, and you make a treatment. That's what medicine, you do that every day. You're going to do that every day of your life for the rest of your life. You're going to use that formula. Well, what about life? It's no different. If you leave the operating room, I've seen people who go to the committee meetings and they don't even think anymore. The principles are the same. They are faced with a challenge or a problem. You have to go out and get data, just like we do from patients. You have to read and learn about it. You have to come up with some choices, and you make a solution. This is a principle you will use through your whole life. You'll use it when your children talk to you about the problems they face in the future. When you're in your business, when you're working with your colleagues, it's the same principle. It's a logical principle. You're learning it every day if you're doing it right. And some people will say, oh, I can't do this, or everybody I talk to, the answer is no. I know all the reasons why it can't be done. Now go find a way to do it. You want to be the best you can be. Are you going to be like everybody else and say no? You're going to find the answer, create the answer, work for the answer. Because in the end, you deserve what you get in life. And if you want to be a person who's pessimistic, that's what you're going to get. If you want to be a person who doesn't look for the good in people, looks for the bad, that's what you're going to be. If you're not going to look and work for the patient and think about other things like money, that's what you're going to be. Greedy. If you're not going to be devoted to the truth and stand up for the truth, you're going to be a liar. Is that what you want? I don't think so. And if you want to make an excuse that, well, it's better in the United States, I know people in the United States and they aren't very happy because they haven't done the things that you can do anywhere in the world to be the best they can be. To be happy, to be positive. That's their problem. In life, everybody gets what they deserve. So your future is up to you. It isn't up to me. I've had my chance. It's up to you. What are you going to do with this gift? Maybe a little different, you think about that now. Well, I've had some people write me about what they really would like and what are their problems when they're young. What are the solutions for those? What are the solutions today? We're trying to solve a problem, which is to get you experience from people who know things. I'm not the only older person in neurosurgery. There are many of them. They have all very good ideas. Listen to them. If you don't want to listen to history, you're doomed to fail because you'll make the same mistakes over and over again. I have people who send us articles who don't want to go back and look at the literature beyond 10 years. They miss all the pertinent information, all the important information. They're not getting the truth. You have to work for it. So how do we get people, young people around the world want mentors? They want somebody that they can follow. What's a solution for that? I'm going to ask you, I'm in the discussion period. I'm going to ask you, what's your solution for that? So if you have anything you want to write me or talk to me about, that's my email address. Write me, I'll write you back as soon as I can do that. It doesn't matter where you live in the world. Be happy to help you. That's what I want you to do for everybody else with your life. I came into the world and what I wanted to do is to leave the world better off than I came in. I think I've done what I wanted. I want you to do the same. So we can build a civilization, build people, do better. That's what it's about. So those are the 13 most important lessons I learned. My name and my background isn't important. And I want to thank you for listening. And I wish you the best of luck. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Professor Perilla.
Yes. Thank you, Dr. Ausman, because in your conference, you show your soul that I say from the beginning, and you take us how is the right way for be really honest with the patients and in with ourselves. This is the most important lessons that we have to learn, that we is in ourselves, is in our work, is in our feelings, that is in our principles, that we have conducted all our profession. If we have to take out all arrogance, all feelings, and only think that we are decided to be neurosurgeons, medical doctors, for help to the patient to take care of the pain. And this is all because the life are in other hands. So we must to do it. All these advices, if we think with one honest soul and generosity, like you are show for 60 years in medicine, and will be probably more successful. Thank you so much for giving to us your soul, your life, for the neurosurgery, and also for share today with all this experience with all audience. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tito.
So much. We can take one quick comment from Professor Suresh Nair before we move on to the second lecture. Professor Suresh Nair.
Thank you, Raja, for giving me this great opportunity. Professor Ausman, this was one of the best ever lecture I have listened in my 40 years as a neurosurgeon. And the message you gave that one should be patient-centric. Patient comes first and we should be honest and truthful to the patient. And next point you told that all lives matter. What better word, sentence than this? And that is a precise thing we got from you. All lives matter and one should always support truth and fight for truth. You told us about the golden rule, do unto others as you would have them unto you. Absolutely correct. And lastly, you told that all the patients should be treated like our family member, and it is the attitude of somebody which decides. One can be the best with what one has. We don't have to be rich or anything. And you also told that answers can be found for all problems. And our future is up to us. What a great lecture, Professor Ausman. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.